Podcast meeting brilliant minds and looking at the world around them. How do they 360 themselves and 360 the world? Jamie Neal, the host, asks many questions about their mindset and how they fundamentally operate their world and the world around them. Hello, welcome back to 360 Yourself. I hope you're having a beautiful morning wherever you are in the world, if you're in New York, London, Devon, where I am currently hibernating away, really enjoying it. Just making sure that every day you're doing your meditation, reciting your life mantra, whatever it might be. Mine every morning is that what I recite to myself is, happiness is a choice. And in this moment in time, we're all a bit uncertain what the future is. And I think the small things in life can make us happy. So we have our health, we've got our family. If you've got a bit of money in the bank, that's amazing. Think about the small things in life to make you happy, because I think sometimes we overthink things. And I think that's really, really important. So obviously there is a massive thing going on in America at the moment, the Trump and Biden debate, which happened last night. I hope you had a moment to look at it. Please, please do vote if you are able to vote, because we obviously want to encourage that. And I don't know if you're siding for Trump or Biden, whatever you are, I'm personally for Biden. So please, please do vote. So I'm urging all my listeners to vote for it, because obviously we want to go into a great result. So today I've got an amazing guest for you. And as always, I always love talking to my guest. I find it therapy. I find it like an enjoyment. I love getting to know people. So today I've got myself on the podcast, Jimmy. How are you doing, Jimmy?
Hey, Jamie, I'm good. Thank you for having me on.
No worries, no worries. So I hear that you're in LA at the moment.
I am in LA, and LA is a different place. I've been sort of living between LA and London now for the last sort of five, six years, and it's a bit like a ghost town now, and yet there's a sense of something's coming around the corner. Something's happening on the 3rd of November. I'm not quite sure what it is. But no, so it was the Biden and Trump debate last night. I didn't get to see it. I was auditioning for some really good projects. So I was doing some work, but I managed to catch the last 20 minutes. And I'm for Biden. And yet I don't know. I feel like...
I think it's going to be tight this year, and I think people underestimate the power of voting. I think people need to vote, because if not, well, I think what happened last year, people thought we were safe, and some people didn't vote, and then suddenly Trump won. You're like, well, why didn't you vote then?
You're right. It's interesting though. I feel like that happens all the time. You know, over the cycle, it's like, when will we be educated enough and consistent enough to really value the power of voting? You know, I feel like this always pops up. So we will see. We will see.
But you're not originally from America. You're born in London, I heard.
I'm a proper East Londoner, Jamie, mate. I was born in Plaistow, near Canning Town. You know, so I'm like, you know, Danny Dyer's went to a school near me. I don't know him, but, you know, I think we're sort of, well, a few of the actors from sort of the borough of Newham that are doing well as Kano as well, and Idris Elba. I suppose he's the biggest name to come out of the borough of Newham, East London. I'm really proud to come from East London. There's a lot of talent and positivity coming out of an area that actually sort of, you know, I think my borough is probably one of the poorest boroughs in Newham, and yet there's something about that area that does seem to turn out like I don't know, whether actors, creative actors, sports people, singers. There's a creative gene for swimming around in the water, maybe.
Yeah. And so what is your upbringing then? Are your family in the creative arts? How did you get the bug, as they say?
No, none of my family are in the creative arts. Well, it's interesting. My background, I'm Nigerian, but I was born here in London. And at the same time, I was fostered by a fantastic white foster family. And so I've got this duality thing going on where when I speak to like my older brother, that was Shola Akinbola, who is actually a percussionist for Jamiroquai. So it's interesting. I wouldn't say that we're an arty family, but he was the first to go, I'm not going to be a doctor or a lawyer or a banker, which is a very sort of like, you know, African, West African thing to do. And he went on to do music, which upset my dad. But when he speaks to me, he says that our great grandma was a performer in Nigeria. And it wasn't, I don't think that was a thing as a woman, you're not supposed to do that sort of stuff. But she was like a big, big name. Mm-hmm. Obviously my dad wouldn't tell us that because he wants us all to be doctors and lawyers. But yeah. I think there's that gene, that I think that's coming through our family. So when I was a young kid growing up, seeing my brother Shola with Jamiroquai and them at the MTV Awards, and you know, like they were huge. And then seeing my brother do that, me knowing I can't sing, I'm rubbish at music, then going, if I can get to that level, but maybe doing some acting. I remember having that conversation with myself when I was about 15, 16. Mm-hmm. And then his daughter, Fola Evans Akinbola, she's become an actress now. I had a brother called Shegan Akinbola. He was an actor for a bit. So I think my eldest brother led it, and then the rest of us have followed and sort of found our own calling. And then with my foster family, I remember sort of growing up with them, and we watched a lot of TV, like a lot of Only Fools and Horses, you know? So I was so happy when I got to work with Roger Lloyd Pack. But also with my older brothers, I'm the youngest of four, that we used to watch lots of films, like, you know, the Eddie Murphy films and Planes and Automobiles and the ones I shouldn't be watching, like Scarface and stuff like that.
You're telling me all classics that I love, all classics.
Yeah, inspiring.
Yeah, but you've had such a varied career, and I love all the projects that you've been going. What are you doing at the moment? What's your current project at the moment?
So my current project, actually, I'm not actually acting at the moment. I literally just this year, actually, there's been projects. So this year I did a ITV comedy called Kate and Koji with Brenda Blethyn. It's their most successful sitcom, I think, in the last sort of 8-10 years. And we've got a season 2 that we're filming next year. So that was great. And I play Koji. He's a asylum seeker, a doctor, and it's a bit like The Odd Couple, you know? Will they be friends or not, you know? And eventually they do. And yet at the same time, it's doing a lot politically for that show to be on ITV and prime time. And I'm all about, for me, representation matters and diversity and inclusion. So for me to be in a lead role alongside Brenda Blethyn, you know, it's a very important moment for me, and I'm really proud of the show. And then after that, I did a show called Most Dangerous Games, which is a Quibi show. Quibi's just collapsed because $2 billion
is not enough. No way, it collapsed?
Yeah. How did you know this? Yeah, I know. I just found out like 2 days ago. Oh, no. But I loved launching that that service with Liam Hemsworth and playing, going from comedy, doing a thriller action drama. And then also I had In the Long Run, season 3 came out this year. So that was great. Doing some more comedy with Idris Elba. And again, that connection that we're both from East London, from the same area, and to play his brother. I feel like,
It must be so nice because you're from the same area, so you feel that kind of bond.
Yeah, and that knowing of what it was like in the sort of mid to late 80s, and both being West African, and to play brothers was such a joy, and to shoot all around East and Southeast London. And then the other show that I've been in this year as well is Ted Lasso, is an Apple comedy with Jason Sudeikis, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I've had a, during a pandemic, I've had a really great year in terms of work-wise. And then we top that off by being at ITV. I believe in nurturing, you know, and trying to do the most you can with it in terms of what position you have in the industry. And,
sure.
And so I spoke to ITV about this game show, this comedy panel show. It's called Sorry I Didn't Know. It's about Black history, and it's about all our history in terms of, you know, it doesn't matter what color you are, your demographic, gender, etc. But we did the pilot in 2016, Jamie, and we knew it was ahead of its time then in 2016. But unfortunately, all the channels were like, we don't think our audiences will respond to this. They saw it as a risk, as a niche and something other, because there's never been a panel show that's had two women as captains, two Black women. There's never been a panel show that's had a had a host that is looks like me. You know, like, you know, the joke is I'm trying to be the Black Stephen Fry, and then Chizzy Akidulu and Judy Love are the first ever female team captains. And so what I'm really proud about is that I went and spoke to ITV. They have truly done so much since, you know, the pandemic and the BLM sort of situation, that for me, they're leading the way. And so the conversation was tricky, but it wasn't a shouting match. It was just a bit like, if you're going to keep posting Black Squares and release these really amazing statements that you're about change, then you have to back it up with action, you know?
Yeah. I totally agree, because I was talking to a lot of people about this when Black Lives Matter movement happened, and people were just posting squares, and I was like, well, it's great to post squares, but what else are we gonna do? Like, because sometimes people just jump on the bandwagon and they go, okay, and certain brands do that, and I'm like, but what are you actually contributing? What are you gonna do as well as making a noise on Instagram? And I think it's really important that if you're making statements as a company, you also back it up.
Yeah. And there you go. Like, look at that. I wish I said that to ITV when I had the meeting. But I said something similar to that. And I said to them, like, look, Sorry I Didn't Know is that it's a new fantastic mainstream. It's not an ITV2 show. We made a mainstream show in 2006. Mm. It's funny. It's diverse. And it's about history, but with a touch of color. Wink, wink. Because history, Black History Month, you get a month. But actually, when I speak to a lot of kids, they say they get a week or a day of learning about Black history in school. So we thought, what better way than to educate and entertain everyone, no matter your race, gender, age, religion, or sexuality. Mm-hmm. And we want to have people laughing, but at the same time, learning, you know? And if, you know, if my thing is like, Jamie, if you've got friends and family that love shows like QI, Have I Got News For You, League of Their Own, even Who Wants to Be a Millionaire or The Chase, then you're going to love Sorry I Didn't Know and learn so much, because unfortunately, a lot of Black history, which is, you know, British history, gets marginalized or not really sort of explored, you know?
Yeah.
You can have, look at films, you know, you look at Dunkirk and stuff like that, and it's like, great movie, but there was a lot of other sort of soldiers from other parts of the empire helping us, you know?
And, sure.
And so for me, that's what this show represents. It represents representation, equality, and diversity and inclusion.
That's great. I mean, so what's the development for it now then? So what's next then?
So what's next? This Tuesday coming is the last episode. We got commissioned to do 4 episodes. So chat went really well. So I've got, I'm really pleased that ITV backed us and let us do our version of the comedy panel show. But now, a lot of people on social media, they've been loving it. It's been a hit. It's been trending 3 weeks in a row. Mm. But a lot of people are going, why is it only on for 4 episodes? Why are we October? This show should be on beyond October. And so it's really nice that people have been saying that for us. And we've always believed that. So Jamie, answer your question. The next step is to, hopefully you will watch it on Tuesday, tweet, post on Instagram, and we want this show to be back for a series 2, but then give us an order of like 10, 16 episodes and put it on earlier on in the year, maybe on an earlier time slot. And then later in the year, we could come back and do a Black History Month special and a Christmas special, but just treat it like all the other comedy panel shows. So that's the next step for us. We're going to push it hard, and hopefully we'll be back next year for
series 2. Because you're totally right though, because you see other shows that are similar but not the same what you're doing. And it's about time that we have that on our TV screens, and also to learn a bit more about history.
Yeah, it's just that, and getting that balance, right? For me, again, it's that balance of have a bit of everything. If you really have, truly have like an inclusive sort of schedule and diverse schedule, then there should be enough for everyone, you know? But it's that thing where things have been a certain way for years, Jamie, and then I think some people are just, they're not really aware of it. Like game shows, these comedy panel shows, they've been, since the 70s, it's probably been like 95% men, you know, as captains, as hosts, and a majority of the time they are white men as well. And it's, I mean, just going.
Even if you think about in the US, like I think about like, what's it called? The late night talk shows. You've got James Corden, all sort of thing. I mean, you've got Oprah and Ellen. They're two prominent people. There are obviously other female hosts and presenters, but majority of them are male. And you think, why? Why is that?
Yes, exactly. And it's almost like that thing of don't, you know, if it's not broke, don't try and fix it. And it's like, no, it's broke. The fact that we can only name two of that, because there are other female maybe hosts, but like, it's about that, of that level, right?
Yeah.
Don't go, oh, look, but we've got loads of women doing the time slot at 3 a.m. in the morning or the midday
but
slot.
No one's like, seeing it. Like, that's the thing. No one's seeing these people.
And if you can't see it, I don't believe if you can't see it, you can't achieve it, but representation matters for me, you know? And that's my biggest thing throughout my career. And it's like, if it's not visible, then how are you inspiring that next up-and-coming young girl or guy that wants to do that, wants to be that host, or has an idea for a comedy panel show? And, you know, and so it's really important for me and in everything I do to really make sure that we have, you know, true representation.
Yeah, it's sort of like, I don't know, you probably know Black-ish. I remember watching that on Netflix, and I think that he's a brilliant writer, and I was like, I've not seen that sort of stuff before on Netflix before. It's humorous, it's mainstream, it's educational. It's like, we need more stuff like that on our TV screens.
Yeah, that's such a great show, isn't it, Jamie? Because what I love about that show, because what happens here, someone might see that show or even in the long run and go, oh, it's a black comedy. It's like, no, we never say, oh, Afterlife or The Office is a white comedy. Like, we all watch it. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, Asian, you know, Ghanaian, you know, Polish. Everybody watches it because they get it. And what I love about something like Black-ish and In the Long Run, people get it as well. It's universal. Yeah. But what's happening, you learn, you get the nuances. So Black-ish, they really do cover. They cover all the politics. They cover the nuances in between what goes on between a lot of people within the black community. What I love about Black-ish is that he's from like a working class, like really sort of like ghetto area or something, if I remember rightly. But he's moved on from that. He's done well from himself. But he's got this conflict of going, but I want my son to sort of know where he comes from. Do you know what I mean? And opening that up and getting into that. Is he too bougie now? Can you not be successful and earning some money and not be down and real? Do you know what I mean? And I just think, seeing that stuff come out on TV, and when they did the political one about, you know, Obama and Trump, I was in tears, you know. Mm-hmm. And yet that is a show that's on its own in America. There's not loads of shows like that, even though they've had a history of having a lot of black sitcoms. But then when you go, what do you have in the UK? I think we can have more shows like that.
Yeah. I agree. And I believe your project is going to be that kind of like kickstart for other people to see, as what you said about representation matters. Like, more people are going to be writing it, more execs are going to be seeing it and go, okay, we need more of this stuff.
Yes. Thank you, Jamie. And that's what we obviously want to make a great show, but we are trying to sort of ride this wave and help. We want to help the broadcasters. In some ways, we are Triforce Creative Network. That's the name of our company, and our production company is called Triforce Productions. But we've, for over 16 years, we've been about diversity, championing it, being inclusive, taking risks, like supporting and providing. And if this show can provide a new wave of change in terms of how broadcasters view like content and production companies, then, you know, then that's a great thing. And it needs to happen. But you can't just have the one in, one out, because that if we just have our show, then there's too much pressure on it. We've got to make it right for everyone. You can't please everyone. But if you've got multiple different types of shows going on, then there's a bit for everybody. You know, you might love like Mrs. Brown Boys, and you know, I might not like it, but you know, I might love something like Fleabag or I May Destroy You. You might not like that, but if you can serve people up an array of different, you know, diverse and interesting and inclusive content, then there should be enough for everybody to be happy and to be represented via the storylines.
Yeah, I agree. And so separate from what you're doing in your career, how do you kind of relax? How do you find your mantra? Because obviously there's so much going on in the world at this moment in time with COVID and that sort of thing. Where do you find your zen? How do you find it?
It's interesting. Probably until I got to LA over like 6 years ago, I probably didn't really find it. I think back in the day, it might have been via a mixture of going to the gym. I was a bit of a gamer, you know, as well. You know, I was into my sort of Xbox, PlayStation, and connecting with friends in terms of that would help me switch off.
And in the gym, which games would you play on console?
Oh, I'm a big football man, Jamie.
FIFA, yes.
Yeah, FIFA. I would lose hours playing that.
me too. That was my game for Xbox. That and Halo.
Yeah, oh, Halo as well. Yes. And it was just a great way to sort of connect with my friends and, you know, family members. But after that, Jamie, I would say, look, there was that sort of thing of letting yourself go. Stop. You switch off, you know, there's a bit of like you're in the world of the game. Or if I was at the gym, it was almost sort of meditative in terms of that. I was in a zone of like, I don't mind the gym, but I don't love it. But I was just focused of like, I want to get through this hour and a half. I want to feel good after it. And I want to get back into my life. But coming to LA, I got into meditation, you know. A couple of people sent me some apps and I started off there. And that really helped because LA is a calmer city, I feel, than London. The way I'm in my career and how hard I've worked, it sort of served me, but also it's me riding that beat of London. So London is a bit like New York, but New York's like London with drugs, you know, with steroids. Yeah. It's like times 100. But when I got to LA, it was so much more still. And so it took me a while. It freaked me out because I was used to moving fast. And then what meditation gave me was a sense of being comfortable in the stillness. Mm. And it gave me sort of clarity in terms of how I wanted to move forward, not only just the day ahead of me, but in terms of my life. Do you know what I mean? In terms of choices and how I'm feeling and what does it feel like being a new person in a new city and starting again in another country. Do you know what I mean? I found myself in LA going, all right, I've got a career in the UK and yet I'm starting at the bottom of the ladder here in LA. But like, if I wasn't as probably in touch with myself and still, I think I would have freaked myself out, you know, if I would have over thought it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because it's a totally new city and it's new rules. Like you go to Berlin, you go to Paris or wherever you go, they work totally differently. So you would feel a bit overwhelmed slightly because you're not starting again, but you're understanding the rules of the jungle in this new space. And I think having that kind of meditation to give you that calmness is really, really great.
Yeah. And I my routine here is beautiful. Like I would wake up, let's say about 6:30 or 7, the sun would already be out, and then I would walk to Runyon Canyon and I would have done my meditation, but even the walk to Runyon Canyon and hiking, and I'm up before everybody else and I'm looking over the city, even that, it would be like, I would be able to get to the canyon and back in about an hour. Uh-huh. And so I felt like, if I'm honest, like the first 2 hours of my morning, I was constantly in that space and it was just beautiful. Uh-huh. And it's great that I have that here. And when I get to London, I find it harder to hold on to that. You know, I'm not far from sort of Primrose Hill and stuff now. I'm in Northwest London, but it's still not the same. You know, I go for a walk, I might try a little jog, but it's not the same. And I have to work harder to hold that energy and that spirit that I have here in LA.
Yeah, totally understand. Because yeah, I'm jumping between Devon and London at the moment, and even though there's lots of green and there's lots of space in London with Hampstead Heath and Hyde Park and what sort of thing, it's there's a massive shift of energy and pace. So I can understand how even if you feel like you're doing pretty much the same things in London, it's a totally different way of doing it in LA.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And you, like that, you say the Devon, you can feel, when you come into London, you can feel it in your bones. Like, it just changes the energy, doesn't it? From the calmer, the life that you have in Devon. And as soon as you come into the city, it's just like this energy that picks up. And I suppose in some ways, during the lockdown, I felt, that was the first time I felt it less so. It did feel much more slower and calmer.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, because the whole world stopped, I suppose. That's what it took. You know, it was, and we had nice weather, and so the skies were clear. And I just really, I found myself able to sit in the, what are you rushing around for, Jim? the world stopped. So just allow yourself.
That's literally what I thought yesterday. I had 5 minutes of panic. And I was like, what am I doing? Da, 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 da. Things aren't coming together. And I was like, Jamie, zoom out again. The world is literally like stopping. In Ireland today, I think it was today, yesterday, they've now announced they're doing 6 weeks of lockdown. Like that's what we're living with. So like when I get anxious or annoyed of certain situations, I have to remind myself going, Jamie, you cannot control what's happening in this world at the moment. Like this is just not happening. So you just have to enjoy it. I decided to leave my laptop. I went to the pub, had a pint. I was like, I'm just gonna go take my time. I've got no rush at all at this moment in time, because nothing can really work as normal.
And you're right. And when you started this podcast, you talked about finding the moments to be happy and celebrate. And don't get me wrong, like, you know, a lot of people are going through some tough, hard times. Even my family, we've been through some really tough times. But it really is important to try and keep sort of holding on to the positivity, however big or small it is. You know what I mean? Trying to, like you say, if you have your health, your family, you know, a little bit of money, you know, whatever thing it is, you know, if you're reading a good book at the moment that you're excited to get to, just really hold on to it tight. And because there's been so much pain, loss and negativity this year, that actually when you have got those little moments of, I don't know, moments of shining light, it's easy to miss them and or dismiss them, you know, and just be focused on all the other stuff. And
For sure. And so just to finalize, I mean, it's segued very nicely into this. What would be your life mantra or something that you kind of wake up every morning? One of my things is that I always quote to myself, happiness is a choice. I love this quote, because I believe that you can change your mindset so easily by just thinking of happy thoughts or thinking of positive or thinking of the grateful things in your life. Do you have one that you would give to the audience?
It's a good one. What do I have?
It might be a phrase, it might be something that you do, it might be a word, it might just be like a sentence, whatever it is, it might be anything.
I feel like it's a tough one. I feel like I don't have anything I say, but I live by I choose to focus on positivity and happiness, no matter how bad things are, you know? And I would say the moments, obviously, if things are really bad, I won't be feeling that. But the majority of the time, that's how I choose to live. And I think that came that's come from not wanting to let my life be dictated by some of the tough things that I've been through, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think trying to focus on what, however big or small, positivity and trying to remind yourself what makes you happy, you know? And like you say, we've talked about playing FIFA. I could be happy going to a shop and seeing a small refreshers bar. I don't know if you know what those are. But just even that, because it reminds me of my childhood, you know, of like you got 20p and you got a 20p, you know, bag of sweets. And and so that's the sort of, I don't have a clear like hashtag quote for it, but I do, that is how I live my life. And it's worked for me, and I've had to, and because of stuff that's happened in my life, but also because of being an actor, you know, it's such an insecure profession, you know, and you get told, no, it's not you, so many times. And if I didn't do that, then I think, you know, I know we're not brain surgeons and whatnot, but it can really be taxing on your sense of self, your mental health, you know?
It seems like you have it all kind of figured out, but you seem to know yourself quite well and how to manage yourself when you're in those times. And you give yourself these tools when you're in moments of flux, I call it. So it's really lovely to hear from you in terms of, and also in your new space of how you're operating in your new space in LA. So that's also really positive.
Oh, thank you. And it's all growth, right? Each year we're changing and growing all the time, and we're always trying to, you can always try and better yourself in some ways, you know what I mean? Like you say, we're talking about meditation, or it might be therapy for some people, and I think definitely this year the pandemic has made us all step back and ask ourselves some questions and maybe make some changes, and not really know we needed to make them, but the universe is forcing us. And I found that very interesting. I've made some choices where I'm like, yeah, okay, they maybe have been in my head, but where we are in the world, everything's accelerated, you know? So I'm thinking this way now, I want to do this now. And I think that's good for all of us, for the whole planet.
I totally agree. Well, I want to say thank you so much for your time, and it's been awesome to really get to know you a lot better. And also, I'm rooting for you for your current projects, and I can't wait to see it on Tuesday.
Jamie, thank you so much, and I love doing this podcast. I feel what you're doing is great, and it's different from a lot of the others. And I think, you know, a lot of the subjects that you cover, I just think it's really important, and it's great to hear people sort of talk in a different way, in a deeper sense. So
thank you very much.
This is 360 Yourself, and I'm Jamie Neal. Thank you very much for taking a moment to listen to our wonderful guests. Please subscribe to our podcast to access all our brilliant guest episodes. They are released every Sunday at 12 p.m. We are available on all listening platforms: Spotify, Pocket Cast, Overcast, Google Podcasts, and Castro. You can also find us on Instagram at 360_yourself, Twitter at yourself360, and our host at Jamie Neal JN. Thank you for listening.